Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Ben Carrington, a professor in the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California, where he teaches sociology. He previously taught at the University of Texas at Austin and currently serves on the editorial boards of Identities Global Studies in Culture and Power, the Journal of Sports and Social Issues, and the International Review for the Sociology of Sports. And his latest book is Race, Sport, and Politics. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ben Carrington.
Nice to join you.
Well, thank you. On this Super Bowl, I think it's an appropriate subject, the NFL, and there's a number of aspects of the NFL which will not be discussed, I expect, on television today. One of them, of course, is that according to an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, Americans are turning away from this popular sport, American football. It's dropped 9%, down from 51% over the past 4 years. So let's begin with that. What is the reason, do you think, Ben, for the decline in America's favorite sport?
Well, you're right. There's been a decline, especially in some of the attendance figures for watching not just the Super Bowl today, but the games in general. Although we should put that into context, football remains the most watched sport on American television. Today's Super Bowl will probably be the most watched event of the year. So these are declines, but from very, very high numbers. So it depends how we want to look at the figures. But they certainly had a series of issues. There's been concerns around concussions in the NFL and the treatment of players. A year or so ago, they had a series of high-profile domestic violence issues in the NFL, which kind of damaged the image. And of course, I mean, this needs to be put in the context of the ongoing protests that have taken place with Colin Kaepernick back in 2016. Which were there were some follow-up protests during 2017, but the issue seemed to have died away slightly with a relatively small number of players still protesting up until, of course, Donald Trump made his intervention in the speech in Alabama. I think it was in October, late September, October of last year, when he infamously referred to the players as sons of bitches. And that produced a form of solidarity amongst the players and even, strange enough, some of the owners kind of standing alongside the players. But it has produced this general kind of sense that the NFL has now become not just a sporting football game, but a political football. And some have suggested that some people have turned away and stopped watching because they think that the NFL has become, quote, too politicized. But it certainly does find itself in a kind of a maelstrom of discussions around identity, politics, race, safety, etc. And so that the brand or the shield, as the NFL owners and commissioner like to talk about it, has certainly taken a dent over the past few months.
Well, it was pretty clear from the State of the Union address a couple of nights ago that when Donald Trump took a swipe at NFL protesters, he got a huge and sustained applause. He was basically talking about a young Preston Sharp, a 12-year-old boy in Redding, California, who placed 40,000 flags on the grave of veterans. And then Trump, praising Sharp, said, "Young patriots like Preston teach us all about our civic duty as Americans. Preston's reverence for those who have served our nation reminds us why we salute our flag, why we put our hands on our heart for the Pledge of Allegiance, and why we proudly stand for the national anthem." Pretty unequivocal, wouldn't you say, Ben Carrington, what he was
saying? Yeah, you're right. And so when Trump said that piece, which you're right, was a direct attack on the black athletes who have been protesting, and not just in the NFL, but across a range of sports. You're right, I was quite struck by it when I watched it live on TV. That produced the loudest cheer of the evening, followed by chants of USA, USA, USA in the actual chamber itself. For those of us that are familiar with the history of, using sports as a spectacle to whip up nationalistic agendas, which border on the kind, and they're predicated on kind of like a xenophobic and racist exclusion, the kind of fascistic overtones of those moments are really striking. So, it's remarkable that probably the only event which you could say comes close to being like a non-state-sanctioned national cultural event, in other words, today's Super Bowl, has now revealed, I think, some of the always implicit but really explicit deeply nationalistic and often militaristic kind of undertones, which is why, you know, the NFL desperately trying to avoid the kind of the political discussions. But I think it's now overdetermined that the football in particular, and these especially these kind of very nationalistic discourses that surround professional sports, men's professional sports in particular, means that it's now a key part of the national discussion around what does it mean to be American, and also, like, are you for or against Donald Trump? Because now, effectively, Trump has drawn the lines to such an extent with those comments that he made during his State of the Union speech that effectively, you know, unless you're willing to speak out against Trump and those forms of overt nationalism, then effectively you're endorsing kind of Trump's vision of American nationalism.
And again, I'm speaking with Ben Carrington. He's a professor in the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California, where he teaches sociology. He previously taught at the University of Texas at Austin and currently serves on the editorial boards of Identities, Global Studies in Culture and Power, the Journal of Sport and Social Issues, and International Review for the Sociology of Sport. In his latest book is Race, Sport, and Politics. So, by the way, the previous guest on today's program, I asked him about whether Donald Trump is winning in terms of the way he's using the Nunes memo perhaps as a pretext to shut down the Mueller inquiry. And he's already won on the tax returns. He hasn't really revealed his tax returns, breaking a precedent. He's won on the emoluments clause. He's still making money while in his office, and his family, of course, is getting richer off him being the president of the United States. But do you think he's also won the take a knee battle with Colin Kaepernick?
It's hard to say. It depends how we're measuring winning and losing. So on the one hand, you could argue that Donald Trump won. I mean, if you going back to his speech in Huntsville, Alabama, you know, the context in which he referred to the players as sons of bitches was, don't you wish some of his owners would tell these sons of bitches to get off the field and that you're fired? In other words, you can protest, but you're going to lose your job. Colin Kaepernick still is not employed in the NFL. He had a whole season where it was clear that he was effectively being blacklisted by the owners. So in that sense, Trump won. Yes, now his call to the owners to make sure that the Kaepernicks of the world are given a lesson, which means that they will be, you know, they will lose their employment. In that sense, he won. But you could argue the other way, to say actually, Kaepernick has now become a global icon. Kaepernick is now, his message, his calls, the discussions around social injustice, his kind of question of police brutality towards black populations, that's now entered into mainstream discussions. Even some of these sports commentators who don't want to be talking about those issues now have to be kind of at least semi-versed on the topic. And so in a strange way, he's kind of elevated Colin Kaepernick's position. And now, potentially, there was always a group of people for whom Colin Kaepernick was a traitor. You know, he didn't deserve to be an NFL player. You know, he should be grateful for what he's got, and he should, quote, just shut up and play. Those people still have that same position, but they were Trump supporters. They were the same people that were in the Huntsville audience clapping Trump, and actually also they started chanting USA USA at that moment. So that kind of white nationalist strand that Trump relies upon is still against Colin Kaepernick, but that was never going to change. I think what may have shifted, and this is a sense in which we might say that Trump has lost, that there may be some people, quote, in the middle, for whom they think you probably should stand during the national anthem. They think it's disrespectful if you don't do that, and they didn't quite understand what Kaepernick was doing. But they probably were kind of appalled by the language that Trump used. And I think that he may have lost a group of people for whom would now say, well, it seems a bit unfair of what they're doing to Colin Kaepernick. I don't necessarily agree with what he was doing, but it seems certainly disproportionate to call him a son of a bitch. And it's disproportionate that he hasn't been able to play again. So I think in the longer term, actually, I think you could say that Kaepernick won by the very fact of his exclusion, because he revealed the underlying racism, within U.S. society, but within the NFL itself.
So to today's Super Bowl game between the Eagles and the Patriots, the last game, of course, against the Jacksonville Jaguars, which I watched, the Patriots, it was pretty shocking, actually, that the hit that Rob Gronkowski took to a helmet to helmet, it looked like a deliberate sabotaging of the game, in as much as he had a bad concussion and was taken off the field, Gronkowski. Apparently he's going to play today, but he's had them before as well. And this CTE issue is not going away. A movie was made about it with Will Smith, about the Nigerian doctor who first drew attention to this degenerative brain condition caused by repeated blows to the head and concussions. And there's a great deal of concern that it can start very young with young kids and college players, as well as career NFL people, many of whom have ended up in terrible shape. One, of course, prominent player committed suicide because of his brain injury. How much have they dodged a bullet on this, or is this just not going to go away? The NFL, I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's not going to go away, because the NFL is football is an inherently violent sport. It's predicated upon violence. The entire structure of the game, as it's developed, you know, as players have become stronger and faster, as you know, sports science has kind of engineered players to, you know, to hit more quickly, more effectively, and harder, means that you're going to see increased forms of head-on-head, body-to-head contact, which cause concussions. Even as the NFL tries to impose some rules to try to mitigate against some of the excesses, and the key thing, I mean, this is another thing to think about, and you're right to kind of point out that one of the issues in relation to concussion isn't so much the single hit to the head in which a concussion is produced, which is bad enough. It's the multiple hits over a period of time. And they don't necessarily have to be huge hits. I mean, sometimes, you know, you'll see the big hits, which tend to get the traction, you know, especially when, you know, a player catches the ball and goes to turn and they're blindsided by a hit. It can be the repetition of relatively small hits to the head, or just the head hitting the ground, which happens a lot, especially for, you know, the quarterbacks and some of the wide receivers. That's intrinsic to the sport. So, I mean, it was interesting. You had that moment last week when Justin Timberlake, who's doing the halftime show, was asked a question, and he said he would never let his son play football. just think about that for a moment. That the person, you know, headlining what for many people was actually a more important and an interesting part of the Super Bowl Sunday, the halftime show, more important than the actual game, said himself that he did not want his son playing football. And he was referencing, of course, the issues of kind of concussion and damage. And you can just imagine the PR people at the NFL, you know, just like scrambling to try to deal with it. And he's right. So I think, I mean, again, this is one of the unacknowledged parts of why football remains popular. Going back to our earlier discussion, is the violence, you know, and, you know, remember the other thing that Donald Trump said in Huntsville, Alabama, and this got less coverage because of his attack on the players, you know, when he referred to them as sons of bitches. He in that same part of the speech, he then went on to complain that apparently he'd watched a game a week before and the referees were throwing too many flags protecting players for illegal hits. And this Trump said was a bad thing. Yeah, that the game was becoming like wussified, feminized in some way. That, you know, he wants to turn on, you know, the game on a Sunday and watch players smashing the crap out of each other. You know, he likes to see the big hits, which we know means that another human being is being brutalized. So that was part of what Trump was kind of, you know, rallying against. Not just the politicization of the NFL and, you know, black athletes finding a voice. What also troubled him was the fact that he wanted to get enjoyment every Sunday by watching big hits and players being concussed, and that's what he was paying his money for. And so, you know, the kind of spectacle of, you know, predominantly white audiences with almost exclusively white owners producing a sport in which black bodies labor, you know, under conditions which inevitably damage them, is, you know, in some ways a grotesque spectacle, which is why you need the halftime show, which is why you need the promotions and the presentations to kind of to hide those facts. And you're right, there is that potential, I think, for football to be completely, potentially undermined if we ever became concerned for the players. But part of the discourse is, of course, we don't care about the players, you know, and the notion is, well, they get paid a lot of money, therefore we have the right to watch their bodies being abused. And even if the players in their 40s, 50s and 60s come to regret some of their decisions, but then it's too late because we have another cadre of young guys, 15, 16, 17, who are watching the Super Bowl today and want to be now in the Super Bowl tomorrow or next year or 5 years from now. So there's enough of a pipeline of sporting labour to keep the show going. But the question is a moral question for the rest of us, is are we going to tune in to watch? And at what extent, at what point do we begin to genuinely and honestly reflect upon the damage that is being done by a game as violent as football?
Well, Ben Carrington, I thank you very much for joining us here today on this Super Bowl Sunday.
My pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Ben Carrington, who's a professor in the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California, where he teaches sociology. He previously taught at the University of Texas at Austin and currently serves on the editorial boards of Identities, Global Studies in Culture and Power, the Journal of Sport and Social Issues, and the International Review for the Sociology of Sport. And his latest book is Race, Sport, and Politics. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.